Welcome to the One Climbs Podcast, a show about exploring life through the lens of theology, scripture, symbolism, and ideas that uplift the human mind. Two kinds of simple answers. One is a supposition formed from an inadequately informed thought, and the other comes after deep searching and wrestling with paradoxes. Now, one may lead you astray, and one may lead you to wisdom. One is unripe and tastes bitter, and the other has ripened and is sweet. And in my search for truth, my personal search, I've often dealt with many different paradoxes, and they used to be uncomfortable at first. I used to not like paradoxes because they presented a challenge, and I didn't want a challenge. I wanted an answer. And so it's hard when you really, really want an answer to be presented with a paradox. And you're not sure if it's a contradiction or if you're just missing pieces from the puzzle. And I'm really progressing slowly in my reading of the Book of Mormon right now, because I started off just really deeply analyzing verse 1 of chapter Nephi, verse 1, and I'm still in verse 2 now. So I'm sitting there thinking about what Nephi means here in verse 2. He says, "I make a record in the language of my father, which consists of the learning of the Jews and the language of the Egyptians." Now, I've studied as to, you know, what that language might be, the Egyptian language. It's possible that it could be kind of Demotic, which was the common writing that was available at the time. And then there's hieratic and hieroglyphic. And hieratic is the priestly script that the priests used to write with. And I have some theories that that is what the Book of Mormon was written in. I've written some posts about it on my blog. If you just search Egyptian and maybe the brass plates, because we do know that the brass plates were written in Egyptian, which that in and of itself is kind of curious. They seem to have Lehi's genealogy upon them. So maybe this was a unique record that was kept by the lineage of Joseph. Now, Don Bradley has a theory that the brass plates and even the sword of Laban go way, way back, that these were very ancient relics of Ephraim and Manasseh, who were the children of Joseph, who was sold into Egypt. We all know that, the Joseph coat of many colors, all that. And so that these were relics that were passed down from generation to generation, and that they may have been preserved in the Egyptian language. And so that may be what Nephi had learned and was kind of taught by his father. Let's say Lehi wrote in Demotic, but then was able to understand the characters on the brass plates, because if you look at Demotic and Hieratic, they have some similarities, and it's possible that being able to read one, you could read the other. Same thing for hieroglyphs. The hieroglyphs were a very detailed picture, and then you get to Hieratic, which was simplified, and Demotic was even more simplified. But all of those characters are still somewhat interchangeable. You can recognize them. So kind of one of my theories is that Lehi gets these plates, and for whatever reason, he knows the Egyptian language. Some have theorized that maybe he was a trader, that he would go and trade maybe goods or spices or things like that. Now, from what I've read, Jerusalem at this time was kind of within the Egyptian kingdom, I believe, if my sources are correct about this. And Jerusalem was constantly getting taken in by the Babylonians and all these different guys and wrestling around with it. But at this point, it had kind of been in the bounds of the kingdom and the influence of the Egyptians. And so it's very possible that Lehi did have some dealings with them. But the one thing I think is real interesting about what Nephi writes is he says, I make a record in the language of my father. In the language of my father, which consists of the learning of the Jews and the language of the Egyptians. That to me is very strange. So in verse 4, he says, my father Lehi, having dwelt at Jerusalem in all his days. So Jerusalem was kind of his home base. That's where he lived. He dwelt there all of his days. That doesn't necessarily mean that he didn't travel, but how did he obtain the language of the Egyptians in his common daily life? What was it about him to where Egyptian was considered his language as somebody who dwelt at Jerusalem in all his days? It could be that Egyptian traders came into town and Lehi dealt with them there and he learned their language and he spoke it quite often if he was constantly involved in these business dealings, to where he was just as fluent in Egyptian as he would be in Hebrew. But Nephi calls this the language of his father. And I've often wondered about that, and I've been thinking about that here in this reading. And that's kind of what I'm thinking is maybe he called it his father's language because it was tied into his employment or something else major in his life, to where that was a very prominent thing for him to do is to speak Egyptian. So when he gets these brass plates, he could read them. They were written in Egyptian, and he's sitting there and he's able to actually read and understand them. And it's very likely that he taught Nephi. Now, I don't know if at what point Nephi knew Egyptian. It could have been that Lehi personally trained him, either growing up as a kid or maybe as they're going out into the desert, he's learning these things. But we do know that the record is kept in Egyptian for a while. And then as years and years go by, they seem to have changed the Hebrew alphabet and writing and also changed the Egyptian as well. I mean, you're talking 1,000 years. So for whatever reason, they changed some of these things. And it could be maybe they wanted to conceal certain things from their enemies. Maybe it was just because they were keeping these metal records, they wanted to modify the letters that were written so they were more conducive to being etched into metal plates. Whereas I'd imagine hieratic and demotic are much easier to write with on papyrus with ink, or into maybe clay tablets or wax tablets or whatever they had to write with. So it's very interesting to think about. Well, some people might look at some of these things and say, hey, these are anachronisms or massive inconsistencies in the text. You have a Jew speaking Egyptian, the Egyptian language. What is this? It just sounds like somebody who wrote this didn't know what they were talking about. You know, that's a theory. Many people, that's what they accept. But there's also a possibility that there was something else going on that we don't really know. But so far, thousands of years have passed. And there's only so much you can get from pots and papyrus and clay tablets and records. And I always think about these weird objects, and some of them are known by the name uparts. They're out of place historical artifacts. I can't remember the whole name of the acronym. You could look it up. But one of these is called the Antikythera mechanism. And it was discovered, I think, in the Mediterranean Sea, maybe over by Greece. And it was this ancient computer. And nowadays, they believe it was used to track the movements of planets and stars. So it was a navigational tool. But this this thing apparently was created like 2,000 years before the mechanical watch was created with the gears and everything inside. So 2,000 years before that, this ancient computer existed. It's really fascinating to read about, but there's no other precedent for something like this even to exist. There's no other example of this type of artifact in all of human history. It seemed like a one-off thing that was a passion project or that somebody created, some really brilliant individual had the idea to create this thing. And maybe there was a ton of them. Maybe everybody had one, but I would think that some of them would have existed to this day. Or it could have just been that there was just this one. And we see some of these things throughout history. We have them in museums, these weird objects where only one of these things ever existed. Only one was made. And we're not, and there's a mystery behind it. Maybe in some places we know who created it and their story, but in others, we have no idea how this object, this artifact came into being. And I've often thought that the brass plates are kind of like that type of thing. They may have been a very unique record that was created by somebody who was inspired or had the idea to record the words of the prophets on this metal so that they would last. And Nephi and Lehi picked up on this. They passed it along in their history, and it became kind of an artifact that was passed down through the line of kings. And it may be that those were the only metal records that existed, were the spiritual and historical records, and that everyone else just wrote on, you know, whatever, wood, paper, tablets, some kind of things, or if any kind of writing really existed on a mass scale at all. A lot of times, at least from what I've read anciently, the ability to write was limited to people who were wealthy enough to have those opportunities. And even the ability to read, it just wasn't practical for the average person. And so when I come to the text, I'm always keeping this in mind. We always think that history, we look back on it and we know everything there is to know about how ancient people lived, but we don't. I mean, every now and then they dig something out of the earth and it just totally changes our whole understanding of an entire race of people. And so I think it's not really fair to take this book, the Book of Mormon, and impose that kind of presentism on it. And so when I come to the text, and even when I'm coming to history, whether it's church history or ancient history, you know, I'm just kind of thinking to myself, you know, what could have possibly happened here? You know, sometimes you read some historical things and they make outrageous claims that just seem like, how is it possible that this is true? Is this an exaggeration? Maybe it was. Maybe a lot of things we read involve misconceptions. I think there's some of that in the Book of Mormon with the people, especially with certain things specifically, but I can't get into all that. But I do think we see that in our history too. We base so much off of someone's journal entry or something that somebody said third hand, fourth hand. I mean, even closer, even like second hand, you can get some interesting things. But yeah, so history is something I've struggled with a lot because we think that it gives us this clear picture, but it doesn't. And I've done this little thought experiment. I've wondered if I wrote out an explanation of what I did throughout my day, and let's say somebody made a movie of it 50 years from now, like for some reason my journal fell into the hands of somebody and somebody was inspired enough by it that they wanted to make a film about my life in this one particular day, how would they render that? What would the setting be like? Who would the actor be that they chose? Could they nail how words were said? and what the situation was and the feeling that was there and the understanding that came from it. No, I don't think they could. They might do an admirable job at creating an amazing scene for film, but it would be fiction, most of it, except maybe some of the words or what they think I meant by what I wrote. That's why I'm saying it's really hard. And even if I wrote a journal entry of what happened yesterday, and then the very next day, I had somebody try to recreate that and act it out, how accurate would it be if all they did was go off my writing? I don't know. They would probably miss a lot. And now when you put hundreds and thousands of years between us and the present and these people who experience these things, it just seems like that lens of hindsight just gets blurrier and blurrier and blurrier. And so you might ask, well, what's the point of history then? What's the value of it if a vast majority of it is just fake or fiction or distortions? And I think what comes down to, at least for me, is the principles that we get from the history. And the scriptures are not history in the sense of they were written to just try to accurately describe events. I mean, they certainly do that, right? They tell us this happened and that happened and that happened. But behind all of those events in scripture is not just an objective analysis of events. There's a why behind all of those things. There's a meaning there. There are doctrines and principles encoded in the telling of that story. There's something about human nature. There's something about God. There's something about community and family and personal struggle and enlightenment and consciousness and rebirth embedded in those words, which is why scripture is different from any other book, because it was written by inspiration with an intent to deliver to the mind of the reader these things from the mind of God. And to me, that's really the power of scripture and what it conveys to us. So while I'm sitting here struggling with 1 Nephi chapter 2 and wondering about the language of Lehi, there's no way to know for sure. I mean, maybe we'll dig up something in the dirt that gives us some insight into it. It's not even that it's a very significant thing, but it just makes me think and it takes me down this road. And I'm just wondering who Lehi was. We see who he is now and moving forward, but who was he before this? He was just a concerned man in a very corrupt city where the government, the church leaders, everyone was corrupt, it seems like. At least everyone was corrupt enough that warranted the justice of God coming down upon the city and destroying and scattering the people. And we know good people like Daniel and his associates and maybe many other people were carried captive into Babylon. And a lot of other people, the son of Zedekiah, Ishmael, were able to escape. But their stories, the legacy they've left by what's written here, because you know every one of these words was engraved into metal. Not just once, you know, but maybe twice in some cases, with Mormon abridging it. And so every one of these sentences is precious. It took effort to write each one of these things. And here they are in our hands today. So how much do we appreciate them? How much do we search them and really try to get down into the details of not just the event, but what that event means? What does God want us to understand about him and our purpose by giving us these words. What's here for us? And I think that changes as we grow, because it may mean something to us when we're 8 or 12 or 14, but it'll mean something different to us as we grow. As we have new experiences, we'll reflect back on those words, and it will be like we're reading them again for the first time or seeing them in a different light. And I think that's what's so powerful about Scripture. So anyway, those are just some thoughts I want to leave you with. I'm going to get down here to verse 3 eventually. I think I'm going to move on. I think I've gotten enough I need to get from that, but I feel like I need to make more progress here. There's so much more to kind of dig into, but it is fun to just sit and take my time and just soak in everything I can from a single verse even. It's great. So anyway, take it easy out there. We'll talk to you again next time.